Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host the evening, Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, and I've got one up for tonight, August 8th, 2023, all about tonight's episode of NXT. So normally what we do here is we jump right into the main event. We'll start talking about that, but I am going to actually jump right into an email. This email comes from Kevin Catani. He says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Big news on the home front since we last spoke. My family has been blessed with a future Universal Champion as our son was born on August 6th. We've got some training to do as his working punch still needs a little bit of work. Kevin, congrats. He sent me a picture earlier in the day. Cute little bugger. Even has a little mini title draped over his shoulder there. So, Roman, he's coming for you. He's coming for you. Anyway, he says, that said, I'm happy to see Dragon Lee in a main event, and I hope that this is the beginning of a sustained push to greatness. Now that we're on the backside of summer, my question relates to folks we don't see on TV as much. Which underused acts, male and female, do you think need and deserve more airtime? Conversely, which featured acts are getting more airtime than they deserve? And lastly, what currently injured superstar are you most looking forward to returning? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. Kevin Catani, PhD. So wanted to start off that because I wanted to say congratulations, Kevin, and to Kevin and his wife on the new addition to the family. So kick things off on a positive note here. He at least mentions Dragon Lee in the main event. So here's what I think we'll do. We'll talk about the main event and then we'll circle back and we'll answer Kevin's email. If you'd like to be a part of the show, like Kevin is here, you can email us pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, or you could call us at 515-605-9345. Hit one on the switchboard, hit one on your phone. That'll put a little flag up next to your phone number and let me know that you want to be part of the show. We don't have anybody in the caller queue tonight, so it's a perfect time to jump in if you'd like to. But so let's go ahead and talk about the main event. We had Dominic Mysterio with Rhea Ripley in his corner versus Dragon Lee with Rey Mysterio in his corner. This was a fun match for me. I just enjoyed seeing Rey Mysterio come down here to NXT. It's not like we get to see huge big names like this in NXT often, although it's happening more frequently than it used to. But really cool to see Rey Mysterio down here. Last week, Dragon Lee essentially got worked with Rey Mysterio to set this up, make it so he'd be in his corner tonight for the match against his son for the North American title. There's a few different threads weaved throughout this, throughout the course of the night. We also had Lyra Valkyria interrupt an interesting moment between Rhea and Dominic backstage and essentially say that, you know what, I did everything you wanted me to do. I defeated JC Jane, and you know what, you needed to practice what you preach. Don't interfere tonight. And then when Rhea Ripley inevitably interfered later on in the match, kind of figured she was gonna, I mean, it's kind of her role in this particular arrangement, at least in NXT anyway. Lyra Valkyria wound up attacking Rhea Ripley after the match, after Dominic wound up retaining. The match wound up ending after Rhea Ripley attacked Dragon Lee with the Women's World Championship, after Dominic was trying to use the North American Championship against Dragon Lee. Rey interfered and was like, yo, you can't cheat, and tried to take the North American title away. Of course, this distracted the referee and allowed Rhea Ripley to smack good old Dragon Lee in the mask with the title, her title, and allowing Dominic to pick up the win here. I'm I'm fine with it. I mean, I kind of expected this to be the outcome tonight. You know, Dominic retaining against Dragon Lee. If Dragon Lee won, I was going to be over the moon, super excited, like, awesome. But it's kind of what I expected. Totally fine with it. I'm really digging Rey Mysterio down in NXT. It almost feels like they're building NXT around Dom for a little bit. And I was thinking, like, I had that thought earlier tonight, and I started thinking about it, and it's like, why not? He's one of the most popular acts right now on TV. I mean, and I say popular, doesn't mean necessarily cheering him. They're booing him, but I mean, he's one of the hottest acts on TV, period, you know, within the WWE. He needs a little bit more polishing. Put him in NXT for a little bit. Put a title around his waist. Build a brand around him for, I don't know, a few weeks, a month or two. You know, allow Carmelo Hayes to kind of be still there in the background, maybe a little bit, but, you know, which it kind of sucks because Carmelo deserves a little bit more than that, but I don't think this is going to overshadow Carmelo too much, and Carmelo is still going to have his time as NXT champion after Dominic is out of here and loses his North American title to whoever the next challenger may be. It looks, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on, potentially Mustafa Ali. You know, we had a match between Mustafa Ali and Axiom. Now I'm getting way too far. There's a lot with the Dominic angle, North American title angle, and everything kind of revolving around all of that. So, Bruce, feel free to do so.
Hey, everyone. This is Bruce Lee Hazelwick. Find me at @B_Lee253. And my report for tonight's NXT is up on both the free and VIP sides of the torch. So before we get to the match, the Ripley and Valkyria, the interaction in the back, I think that's my favorite part, was Valkyria came up to us and said, am I interrupting something? And Ripley just looks at me going, yes, you are. And I got a good laugh at that, but to the match, what you forgot to add at the end was after getting hit in the back of the head by the title, Dom hit a Michinoku driver to end the match and went by pinfall that way. So the match itself, so what sucked here was that about half of the match and the part of the match that kind of builds toward the climax was during the commercial break. And I don't know if they did split screen because I have the network player. So I missed all that. But from what I was
to
watch,
they did.
They had a split screen? Okay.
Yeah.
From what I was able to see, it was a pretty good match. Dominic continues to just develop, thrive in this heel role. It's not just his mannerisms on the mic and with Ripley, but when you look at him in the ring, just look at the first parts of the match, he really worked the heel angle well, where, you know, Lee forced him into a corner, did a clean break. Dom immediately went after him and slapped him in the chest in the corner instead of doing a clean break, and then retreated into a corner. And when Lee had to back off because he was in the corner, he immediately attacked him. So little things like that, Dom is understanding. And, you know, Eddie's heel run is a real good example for him to use if he's going to look at anybody. And even his face run, because he was doing his heel things but still getting cheered. So I like how the match played out. It was predictable what happened at the end, but, you know, after Great American Bash and our round table, you know, Kelly said that Shawn Michaels stated Dragon Lee was in for a big push. I predicted that the push would actually come at No Mercy. That's when it would start. And that this was, and then last week talked about how I said this would just be sort of a gap stopper between them so that he does get the actual title change there. He has a legitimate gripe. I think this might be Dominic. There's so many triple threat matches with these North American championships, and I don't know that there wasn't a Great American Bash. I can't remember if this is Dom's first or second singles title defense, but if it's his first singles title defense, then it makes sense why Lee would be the one to get a rematch with Dom and have that happen at No Mercy. Mustafa Ali is probably facing him at Heat Wave in 2 weeks, which I mean, just random. I said there'd probably be something in between a PLE Light, but I didn't expect it to be in 2 weeks. But here we go. And you look at the end of the show and what happened here. Not just Rey Mysterio raising the hands of both Dragon Lee and Lyra Valkyria, but I think that with nothing really set in stone for Tiffany Stratton, and it pretty much said as much tonight in her interaction with Mackenzie Mitchell, I think Valkyria getting the better of Rhea Ripley tonight, hitting her with that spin kick to the face, was meant to set up a title match at Heatwave so that they can continue to capitalize on having Judgment Day there, continue to capitalize on Rhea Ripley's presence, and get a women's title match without needing to involve their actual woman champion during a win, not have to have her face someone that they're, you know, they might be linking injuries, they just don't have anything creative ready for her, which we talked about that after the Great American Bash. There's really no one left for her, and that's why I thought Blair Davenport losing was so questionable, but that would require a strat turn. So I think we're going to have Ripley and Valkyria main event at Heatwave, because Carmelo Hayes, while there are people going after him, he's not in a feud right now. The North American Championship match will probably either open the show or be the mid-main. There's really nothing else going on that would garner a main event sort of segment in that PLE Light besides Ripley and Valkyria. So I think that's where we're heading. And, you know, the Dragon Lee push, it's coming. Don't worry. I've been saying that since the beginning. Don't worry. And overall, that's the other thing. So with Rey Mysterio, I have two questions. First is, will they forego the Ali title match at Heatwave? Gosh, getting all these names mixed up. Will they forego that to have a tag team match with Mysterio and Lee versus Dom and either Balor or Priest so that they can continue to use that Judgment Day rub? And then the second thing is, is this it for him in NXT? And if it is, was tonight the best use of him if he's not going to appear anymore, even though I do think he will appear? So, yeah, I think overall there was a lot accomplished throughout the night. There were some questionable things, but regarding the main event and what transpired after, I think it's all setting up to kind of culminate at Heatwave.
Yeah, it kind of seems like what it's looking to be. And if not Heatwave, no mercy. I think it really, I guess, all depends on, you're probably right. Now that I think about it, it does kind of seem like Heatwave. And even if it does extend out to No Mercy, I'd be okay with that. There was one other thing the other thing I wanted to touch on. I want to give Dominic a little bit of credit where credit is due here. I remember when Dom first appeared on NXT, or not NXT, on WWE, alongside his father as a tag team, you know, and everybody say, man, I wish he had some time down in NXT. You know, he was still not where he should have been in the ring with his, you know, in-ring skills, like to actually be on the main roster. Like he should have at least had a bit of a stint in NXT, but I understand, you know, why they put him up there and, you know, team with his dad and all that, whatever, it is what it is. But now here he is down in NXT a couple of years later, 3 years later, 2 years later, however long it's been, time is weird. And he's putting on a match with Dragon Lee, who's at a caliber much higher than him, and he's able to hang. I mean, no, he's, you know, Dominic is not on the same caliber as his father, you know, in his prime, or even now for that matter. But I mean, still, he put on a pretty decent passable match. It was like a weird dragon screw in the corner that kind of got a little botched. I think there was one or two other things that I remember seeing, and I can't recall off the top of my head right now. But man, his in-ring has come a long way. And I probably noticed that in the past, but it really stood out to me tonight where he was having a, you know, pretty banger of a match against somebody like Dragon Lee in NXT. And I'm just kind of thinking about the irony of that, you know, now here he is in NXT kicking ass, whereas like years ago we wanted him in NXT so he could kick ass on the main roster. So let's move on. Let me check. We don't have anybody who wants to talk to us. So if we get a couple of people listening, but if you want to talk, you know, raise your hand. We don't fight.
By the way, there's a hurricane passing south of the islands. It's not like hitting us with the rains and everything, but we're getting some massive winds. So if I end up drop call at any random point, it's probably because the wind cut the power. It's blowing our gate open, like our gate that is closed and everything. Yeah. So It's pretty bad. Just letting you know just in case I drop off.
Sounds good. Sounds good. So maybe, you know, you guys might just wind up with me. You just might wind up with me. It's crazy. We had some weird weather here today too. Like a little storm passed through. It wasn't like a hurricane or anything, but man, I live on the coast. I live in New Hampshire, like right on the coast. Yes, New Hampshire does have a coast. It's very, very small, but I live there. And, oh my God, the trees in my backyard were like bent in half. I've never actually seen them like that before. Anyway, sympathy. We lost power and internet for a little bit, so I get it. All right. We don't have another email either. So what else do we have to talk about? There's a lot. Let's talk about, we'll just go in reverse order here. Ivy Nile versus Kiana James. This was a bit of an interesting match here. I liked the first half of the match before the commercial break. The second half of the match after the commercial break was really just an angle to set Ivy Nile up against or set Ivy Nile up as a person to be interrogated by Schism, I guess is probably the best way I can put it. Schism wound up surrounding the ring in their never-ending quest over the course of the night to find the Creed brothers, which they never did. I mean, if they just turned around and took the masks off the guys standing behind them, they'd probably find them, but, you know, they're not that smart. That is what it is there. I had something written down for that, and I lost it.
Nile, James.
Yeah. There was something I had written down to like specifically say here, and now I don't know where I wrote it. If it was actually in the hits and misses or in my notes for the night. Right. So after the match, I'll just keep going. So after the match, after Kiana James did pick up the win here, Schism basically shooed Kiana James out of the ring and kind of like, hey, there you go, pointed towards the back. She left. Schism went to like almost attack Nile is kind of what it looked like. It looked like Ava was about to attack her when the D'Angelo family made the save. I don't know if that, my guess is we're going to see Ivy Nile align herself with the D'Angelo family temporarily to face a bigger evil in Schism. That's kind of my guess here. The thing that I like, you know, and the angle is what it is. I'm kind of like curious about this whole Schism thing, like, and what they're doing with it, but like mostly because I think it's kind of dumb and I'm kind of hoping that the ending isn't as dumb as everything else, or where they're going, not the ending, but wherever they're going right now isn't quite as dumb as them running around with 1.5 million people in yellow masks looking for the Creed brothers that they've kicked off of NXT. So like, I don't even know why they're looking for him there. They don't technically work there anymore. You guys got them fired, remember? Yeah. Anyway, the match itself, though, we saw at the beginning of this, Kiana James did like a pre-recorded vignette as she was coming down to the ring. They were showing it in kind of like a picture-in-picture in the corner. And she was talking about how Gigi Dolin...
Did you say picture-in-picture? That actually was a picture-in-picture. You're right.
Yeah, it was.
No, was it split screen? I said it was an inset.
I'm going to call it picture-in-picture because the video video switcher I have at work calls that a picture-in-picture.
A split-screen or a picture. I was just calling it a picture-in-picture.
Yeah, that's true, right? But it was actually – I think it was a picture-in-picture. Like they put a little like just window down in the corner. I don't think they had like an NXT board around it. And if they did, it was a small one. But I think it was just a little picture or something in the corner. I don't remember. But you could basically – long story short, you could see this vignette and you could see her walking to the ring at the same time. And in the vignette, she said that Gigi Dolin wasn't able to expose her her wild past, I think is how she put it, but she can still harness it to like, you know, when she needs it. And we're going to kind of see a new side of Kiana James tonight. And we kind of did, at least for the first half of this match before the commercial break that was in
split screen.
Yeah. It was in split screen. The first half of the match, Kiana James, like, we don't often see Ivy Nile like get annihilated. And we kind of did in the first half of this match. Ivy, like, you know, fought back and whatever in the second half. But Kiana, like, was laying it in. She looked believable. Like, she it was like the dial went to 11 here. You know, her offense was crisp, believable, and just mean looking, especially compared to what we've seen out of her before. We've seen, you know, some of that, like, in the past, but, like, I just felt like tonight it was almost like she had a chip on her shoulder, had something to prove. She's, you know, hasn't really been, yeah, she's been in this feud with Gigi Dolin, but it hasn't really been super high profile. Like, I kind of forgot all about it until she brought it up. But I just wanted to point that out because I thought she did a fantastic job in the ring tonight and kind of showing us, at least physically, that there's a little bit of a new side to her. I'm wondering if it'll, you know, if, like, we'll see a bit of a change personality-wise or gimmick-wise, but I don't want to see too much of a gimmick change because I like what she's doing. Bruce, on Nile, James, and Schism and all of that craziness.
Since you were just talking about James, I'll stick with that. And when she entered the ring, she immediately told the ref to call for the bell. I'm just like, ref, you should call for the bell when they're all ready, not when you're told to ring the bell. But anyway, she then threw her big-ass purse bag at Nile. When Nile caught it, she used that to kick her. So I don't think she's ever done anything like that before a start a match. So as you said, she came in, she kind of put actions to what she said in that inset picture-in-picture, whatever you want to say, promo, and did show a different side. They look fine. The stuff with Schism is whatever. They were pounding the mat for a bit, then they petered out, and you could see in one of the shots that one of the dudes with the mask was looking around, making sure he was still pounding. When they all stopped, he made sure he stopped. It was just a bit weird. And then afterward, so this is one of the questionable things I had for tonight was, you have a through line throughout the night with Schism attacking people, asking about the Creed, and yet we never really got a resolution to all that, and instead, we didn't even really get that much of a cliffhanger regarding that either. It was just more like, oh, they're going to, the family came to help them out, and cool, but I was expecting some more follow-up after that to kind of set up next week or the next chapter in this little thing, but we didn't get that either. And the other interesting thing I thought was Ivy Nile still wearing a Diamond Mine shirt when she gets to the ring, so it's still little hints here and there that the Creed brothers have not left NXT, regardless of the match stipulation. And if that's the case, then what are match stipulations even for, Nate? I don't understand.
I don't know. Then they didn't know what the heck a tribal match was where nobody could interfere at SummerSlam either. So, you know. And yet, here we are.
Oh, but wrestling's never changed the rules in the middle of things before, so this is just shocking. Absolutely
right?
Shocking.
Right? It's almost like they make this shit up. Anyway, so let's keep going here. We had a match between Drew Gulak, Charlie Dempsey, Josh Briggs, and Brooks Jensen. Earlier in the night, speaking of Schism, while they were on the manhunt for the Creed brothers, we ran into Hank and Tank backstage trying to think of an awesome new nickname, new tag team name for themselves, and Tank came up with Smash Mouth, and I don't know, I have a feeling you're going to have trouble copyrighting that one, buddy, but, you know, you do you. Schism wound up
at... Dumb.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah, it's pretty bad. You know, it was even a bad joke. Like, I like crappy, bad humor, but that was, like, bad, bad humor, guys.
Well, I don't think it's cool with Hank and Tank. It just works.
Yeah, Hank and Tank. Like, it's perfect. It's written right there. Maybe that's why they don't want to use it. I don't know. But,
and you could even be creative and go Hank and then the letter N, like your Bone Thugs and Harmony, and go Hank and Tank.
Hank Tank, you know?
All these ideas, and they're just laying them out there, not even using them. All this money they're just wasting.
Right? I mean, I even get the T-shirt design in my head, right? You get a tank on the front, and the tank has a face, and it's Hank's, it's a tank's face, and like Hank is out the porthole at the top or whatever it's called, you know, like where you climb in, and he's just like waving stuff, you know, like perfect right there. Awesome tag team shirt. I don't know if it's awesome. It might sell a few. But, you know, it's an idea. It's an idea. You guys are leaving the stuff on the table, all right? Just saying. But anyway, Schism didn't like the idea of Smash Mouth either and wound up just kicking the crap out of Hank and Tank for no real apparent reason other than to establish dominance over the back, I guess, probably. So because of that, that left Drew Gulak and Charlie Dempsey without a partner. Yes, I did say we were talking about Drew Gulak and Charlie Dempsey, and then I went off on Hank and Tank. Without an opponent, thank you, without an opponent. So in a backstage interview with Mackenzie Mitchell, she asked Drew Gulak and Charlie Dempsey like what they thought about that. And one of the things that Drew Gulak said about the backstage about the NXT tag division is that they were S-O-F-T, soft. And I thought that was kind of just a fun little throwback to a tag team we don't necessarily want to remember, but it got a little bit of a pop out of
me.
But
does that make that fun?
It did kind of make it it was still fun, but it wasn't at the same time. Like I was glad he did it, but you know, I don't know. I liked it. Anyway, but he called everybody in the NXT tag division soft. Briggs Jensen took a little bit of offense to that and wound up offering to take the place of Hank and Tank as their opponents in the match. This was okay. It was an all right match. It wasn't anything that, you know, I really, you know, want to write home about, I guess, as good of a tag team match as it could be. Now, Damon Kemp also aligned himself with Gulak and Dempsey earlier in the night. I think it was in that same segment backstage.
Clear if he had aligned themselves with him because they kind of told Kemp off when he said he was tough because look on his face like, what?
That's right.
And then after Briggs and Jensen came in the match, those four walked away and Kemp just looked around like, what? So,
that's right. Yep. And so later on in this match, Damon Kemp, towards the end, wound up making his way to the ring. Jensen was on the outside of the ring. Damon Kemp, behind the referee's back, was able to get off. I believe it was either belly to back or belly to belly suplex.
It was belly to belly.
Okay, belly to belly suplex. And on Jensen, throw him into the ring, and Gulak Dempsey picked up the win shortly thereafter. So it's kind of cool to see Damon Kemp align himself with somebody that kind of stands for what he stands for almost. And it's almost like the antithesis of what Diamond Mine was like in a way, like, well, maybe not antithesis, but basically both like Diamond Mine and Dempsey and Gulak, they're kind of like, you know, shoot fighters, they're, you know, technical fighters. They're, you know, they kind
heel
of,
version.
But they're, yeah, just kind of a heel version of Diamond Mine. And so Damon Kemp kind of coming from Diamond Mine, granted it was like, what, a year ago at this point, but of course, the next faction he joins, very similar vein. I like that. I think it's a great pairing. I kind of forgot about Briggs and Jensen. They've been off TV for a while. Matter of fact, Bruce brought that up in our chat. You know, he's like, how long has this trio been off TV? And I was just like, it seems like it's been a while. They got a lot of TV time. Like they invested a lot into Briggs, Jensen, Henley, and Kiana James. And then all four of them kind of just fizzled off a little bit. So it was great to see all four of them on TV tonight and get a little bit of time back in the spotlight. Now, maybe not necessarily great. Is great might not be the word I'm looking for Briggs and Jensen, especially Jensen. I don't mind Briggs so much. I'm rambling at this point. So, Bruce, over to you.
Yeah, so what I do like about how this was set up is that Mitchell mentioned that they were scheduled to face Hank and Tank, but because of what happened, they didn't have an opponent. And so having this random matchup made, or having this matchup made impromptu, I guess, made more sense because they were just taking the place of the match that was canceled, where a lot of times in the past it's just, oh, it's just been made official. Like, did you not have any matches made official for the card before the night started? What's going on here? So I like that little bit. And again, it took Mackenzie Mitchell all of, what, 3 seconds to say that? So it's not like it takes a lot of time to make have these kind of contextual setups for things that happen throughout the show, throughout the weeks, so on and so forth. The match itself, fine. You forgot to mention the Miles Bourne presence, and Gulak just treating Miles Bourne like crap, dismissing him because Bourne didn't have a water bottle out there for him to drink. And then the match after that belly-to-belly, or not Gulak, Dempsey hit a bridging dragon suplex to win the match, so it was nice to see that because Ultimo Dragon is one of my favorite wrestlers. He was my favorite as a kid because there weren't a lot of Asian cats out there in the 90s, at least in North America, in WCW, WWE, WWF at the time. So it's always nice to see a dragon suplex. Later in the night when Trick Williams was leaving, I'm just bringing this up because they all played a role in it. Their specific part was they confronted him, and Damon Kemp was with them. And Trick Williams, he's like, why would I be afraid of you, Oompa Loompas, Charlie the Chocolate Factory? And that got a nice laugh from the crowd, a nice chuckle.
I like that.
And basically, they were challenging him, or they said, we would train you for your match with Dragunov, but you don't have a chance. So, what? Unlike Diamond Mine, who were basically, you know, trying to get the best out of y'all, Gulak, Dempsey, and Kemp only gonna train you if they see a benefit in it, right? So, I guess with Chase U, the benefit for them was that they got on TV a lot. I don't know. But here, they don't see, and it's probably just to antagonize ones a little bit too, but they hadn't interacted with him recently. I don't even know if they've interacted with him before on the show. So for this to happen makes me think that there's going to be more to this than just them poking fun at Trick Williams for his supposed lack of a chance against Ilya Dragunov, whether that happens next week or happens at Heatwave. We'll get to that segment later, but I thought that was a bit odd, considering they haven't really interacted before.
You know what? Let's just go to that segment now. Ilya Dragunov, Trick Williams. Ilya Dragunov was seen backstage getting interviewed by Mackenzie Mitchell earlier in the night. She was asking him about Trick Williams and everything that happened between them at the Great American Bash. He essentially said, Trick Williams, I'm going to go out to the ring and I expect to meet him there. So it's exactly what he did. Went out to the ring after the commercial break and called out Trick Williams. Trick Williams came out and the two of them had a pretty decent promo battle against one another. Trick Williams, I feel like, held his own here. And basically this is his quest to prove that he is more than just a sidekick. He said as much. He basically said exactly those words tonight in this segment here with Ilya Dragunov. We're going to, you know, like I personally, I think this match when it does happen is going to be fantastic. Trick Williams, not only is he great on the mic, he's also proven that he's a decent hand in the ring as well. And I think he and Ilya are going to wind up having one banger of a match when they actually do meet at, was it Heatwave? I forget if they actually
Heatwave.
Okay,
Trick,
cool.
Trick's the one who actually dropped that Heatwave was happening because he's sitting there and all of a sudden he goes, in 2 weeks at Heatwave, I go, oh, so something is happening.
Yeah.
I thought it was a rather random way to introduce Heatwave to the audience. That's why earlier I said it was rather sudden.
It's almost like Trick Williams, like he dropped it and was like, oh, crap, we haven't announced that yet. Like, I just screwed up. Who was it that tweeted out the picture of Keith Lee holding the North American title and the NXT title at the same time? Almost like that guy. Wasn't it one of like the, man, I don't remember. You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
I have no clue what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, when Keith Lee won the North American title and held both the North American and NXT title at the same time, it was a taped show like 2 weeks in advance.
Oh,
and one of the wrestlers, and it was during COVID, so there was no, like, nobody in the ring, or, you know, no fans in attendance or whatever. And one of the wrestlers, like, took a picture of it and put it on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, and, like, leaked it. And I want to say it was, like, one of I can't think of the tag team name, but I think wow, this is what you guys come for, me trying to remember names here. Jinder Mahal, one of Jinder Mahal's lackeys right now. I think it was one of them.
Indusher,
thank you. My God, I could not think of the name Indusher for the life of me. I think it was one of the two of them. But basically, he probably kind of felt like that guy did when he tweeted it out. That's all I was trying to get at here. It was a very long way of saying that. But yeah, so let me throw it over to you, Trick Williams, Dragunov, you know, on this segment and the match. You know, what do you think we're going to see?
Dragunov is someone that I'm going to attribute this to his intensity. He keeps having face versus face matchups, and you know, Carmelo Hayes, now Trick Williams. I don't think you can classify any of these three as heels. So it's interesting because a lot of times, or I guess the general consensus is that you don't do face versus face, you don't do heel versus heel. Yet with Ilya Dragunov's last two feuds, they're saying, screw that, we're going to do face versus face and we're going to be fine with it. And it worked with Hayes because of how the match was built. And the same thing was built here. I was trying to find different words, but it wasn't so redundant. But nevertheless, it's not just about Williams, that's his name, or Tricky Willie, as he said. Trick Willie. It's not just about him stepping out of the shadow and proving that he's no one's sidekick. But he also gave his props to Dragunov for overcoming him last time they wrestled and really building it on respect and saying, I'm coming after you because you beat everybody except him. Him, of course, being Carmelo Hayes. And he said, if I can beat you, then that basically sets me at the, he said, if I beat the best, that puts me among the best. So he's trying to go out there, and it's like you start an RPG and you use the secret, like it's like you're going to Chrono Trigger. Instead of going to the pod, you're supposed to go to travel back in time. You go to the pod to the right to face Lavos just by yourself or with Marley, just because you want the challenge or because you want the developer's ending, which I did get back in the day. It took me a while, but I got it. So, kudos to Williams for getting himself to a spot through his promos, through his continued development in the ring, that they put him in a situation where he's battling the former number one contender, the most recent number one contender to Carmelo Hayes' championship. And again, Hayes has nothing going on. So if Williams wins, you potentially have a Trick Williams with a legitimate justification for being the number one contender to face Carmelo Hayes for the men's NXT championship. And that would be very interesting how that would be built. But that's down the line. And I guess what we have beyond that is, will this match be what we – will it try to be what we saw at the Great American Bash, or is it going to be a little different? The thing with Williams is, remember, he has a boxing background. And one thing I always say is watch his footwork in the ring. His footwork is really what's helped him in terms of his in-ring development. And with someone like Dragunov, I wonder if that kind of style will mesh well, because while Hayes has wrestled many different styles and we see him kind of like a chameleon, we haven't seen enough of Williams to where I can't be positive that when he does step up, and they already had a match, but this one is going to be a little more, I feel like, have a little more stakes to it, and they're going to try to do a little more. And I just wonder if they're going to try, in doing so, if that's going to create sort of a disjuncture or some sort of moments that don't quite go well together. But beyond that, this promo segment was done well. Each of them came off confident, came off with definitive mission statements, And if Dragunov does win, I think the question is, what the hell then do you do with him? Because he's lost to Hayes already, and you can't put, I don't think you want to put him right back into the title scene again. So we'll see. But yeah, I really enjoyed what these two put out there tonight.
Put Ilya.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
And when Trick was leaving, I guess the other part of it was Wesley drove by and he told Trick, he said, "Hey, tell your boy Carmelo Hayes, I'm not done with him." Whatever. Like, you go tell him yourself. You know, I'm not the psychic anymore. So, yeah, I thought that was kind of funny.
No, exactly. So, no, if Ilya Dragunov does wind up losing, you know, and doesn't, you know, which I don't know. I'm kind of expecting Trick to beat him, honestly, because I feel like this is kind of the rise of Trick Williams. But Ilya, put him in the Heritage Cup scene. Like, I think perfect spot for him. He's going to put on some amazing matches with, you know, the likes of, like, Frazier and, you know, Axiom and all of them. Like, why not? But
my only concern with that is the Heritage Cup for the past few months has been more of has been less serious than Dragunov tends to be.
So we could use it. They could use them to make it a little bit more serious again. I don't know. I mean,
I guess it,
like,
depends on what happens with the,
it would, yeah, I guess it would, yeah, depend on how they book it, you know, and all of that, but it's a thought. It's a thought anyway. But I don't disagree with really anything you said there. So, let's continue on. Speaking of Trick or Carmelo Hayes, let's talk about his one and only segment of the night. Melo was out back, just kind of in the locker room doing his thing, hanging out with the title, being Melo. And Dijak kind of just walks in out of nowhere and basically like, yo, you should pay attention to me, which was kind of weird. It was like he comes in, and I know what they were going for. Like, they're like, hey, I'm doing some, you know, bad things here, like, pay attention to me. I'm coming for your title. You know, you should keep your eye out. But to me, it just, it almost sounded like Dijak was just walking in there and going like, hey, pay attention to me. I'm doing things to get you to notice me. Why won't you notice me? And I thought that was kind of funny. And then Wesley kind of came in. Maybe he got the same vibe too. And he literally just kind of shoves Dijak out of the way and said that, you know, he was coming for the title. So I don't even know why he told Trick Williams to tell Melo that he's coming for the title, because I think Melo, oh, I remember why, because he actually didn't get to tell Melo that. He didn't get to tell Melo he was coming for the title. Melo walked away as Dijak and Wesley got a bit of an argument between the two of them, which I have a feeling is probably going to set up a match between the two of them next week if they didn't already announce that. But yeah, so there's that. I don't know if there's really a whole heck of a lot to talk about there, Bruce.
Well, what you forgot to add was that when Lee came in and just put himself between the two larger men, Dijak said, you're not in the championship picture anymore. You're not in any title picture. And Lee turned around and goes, really? You want to start this? As if to say, like, when have you been in any title picture, Dijak, right? So
right.
I thought that was pretty funny. And then it wasn't that Carmelo Hayes left. It's that as those two started arguing, he just kind of sneakily went the other way. And then Lee turned around. He's like, oh, what the? He's like, for real? And as soon as he said that, he got attacked by Dijak. So Wesley's continuing to show that he can also be someone who can play a pissed off character and bring out that fire and not back down. He did say that, you know, he wants to challenge him in the ring, but I don't think I was expecting to see it tonight after what happened, but you know, with the attack and all that, I'm glad they're not doing that. I'm assuming next week's, I think Heat was already going to have enough on it. And I don't know if this match itself has enough heat to be, okay, that's an unintended pun and review there, enough heat to be on Heat Wave. But for Hayes, you could potentially say that I guess you could say there's four people that could be challenging for his title soon. You have one of these two, Dragunov, and if Williams wins, then Williams. So while he doesn't have anything definitively set up right now, they're laying out paths and options for potential opponents for him at No Mercy. And, you know, maybe it's not even one of these four, but as of right now, these four have the highest probability, I think, to become the next number one contender and face Carmelo Hayes, I'm assuming at No Mercy for the title. So, Dijak, he just seems like he's trying too hard in these segments to me.
Yeah.
So, that aside, though, really like what I saw out of Lee. And Hayes is just complete dismissal. Like, dude, you see what I had going on last week? Why would I pay attention to you, Dijak? I just like, and Hayes continues as they showed, his focus was on Trick Williams, like supporting him from afar, but still supporting him and not necessarily being out there with him. So they're still keeping that tie together.
All right, let's go on and talk about Braun versus Vaughn. Braun Breaker versus Vaughn Wagner. These guys have been getting under each other's skin for a handful of weeks now, and it finally happened, the battle of the Ons, Braun and Vaughn. I don't know. I had too much fun with that in the hits and misses. I apologize. Anyway, this was a match I really could care. I could not care less about, frankly. And it's funny because I'm kind of sort of digging what Von Wagner's been doing lately, sort of. Like, I like the story progression he's had, you know, and, you know, find out about the issue, the condition he was born with that I will never remember the name of. Kelly always brings it up, but I can never remember what it's called. I've kind of liked what they've been doing with him there and all of that. But Braun Breaker, I do not care about Braun Breaker. I do not think about Braun Breaker in terms of, like, title contention or, you know, if somebody's like, hey, who do you see working with this next up-and-comer? I never think about Braun Breaker. He hasn't connected with me, hasn't clicked with me. I don't think he has with a lot of people. He's doing a great job in this heel role, but, like, for me, it's so generic that it just doesn't work. Maybe on the main roster it would, but in NXT, it just doesn't seem to be working. But this match itself, you know, it was basically what I expected it to be, two big men kind of doing their thing. Braun Breaker did wind up getting the win after a spear. After the match, though, we were left with Von Wagner getting the visual win when he tabled, which apparently is part of his new gimmick, if his T-shirt and, like, catchphrase of tabling people is anything to go by now. Tabled him on the announce table. Did the announce table actually break? Because it was not broken later in the night.
No, it broke, and
that's what
and
I thought.
Vic was upset because it sent his little bucket of candy flying everywhere, and he said,
okay.
my poor is my candy's destroyed. And I just went, oh, poor Joseph with your all your candy.
Like, that's right. I remember the candy everywhere because, like, I could have swore they put him through the table.
I made note of it in my report, too. Like, oh,
okay.
The reassembled announce table.
Yeah, because, like, they used to just sit there for the rest of the night without a table. Like,
yep.
You know, not even get a folding table or whatever. But, nope, they reassembled the table, so there's that. I don't know. I don't want to talk about this anymore. So here you go. Bruce.
By the way, I think we forgot to answer the second part of Katani's email. But
oh, my God. We totally did forget to go back to Katani's email. I'm sorry. Well, we will in a minute.
So on this Breaker-Wagner thing, I think the most notable aspect of this beyond Wagner's terrible shirt that said you're going to get tables is that when Breaker came out, his little lower third nameplate started out with the 2.0 colors and then shifted to the black and red heel colors of Braun Breaker. So,
all right. So to remind everybody, Kevin Katani said, I'm happy to see Dragon Lee in a main event, and I hope this is the beginning of a sustained push to greatness. Now that we're on the backside of summer, my question relates to the folks that we don't see on TV as much. Which underutilized acts, male and female, do you think need or deserve more airtime? Conversely, which featured acts are getting more air than they deserve? And lastly, which injured superstar are you most looking forward to returning? Thanks as always, go VIP and listen to AYB. Okay, so which underutilized, let's see, I'm Do you have any – I gotta pull up a roster list. Do you have any ideas on this while I do that?
When it comes to who is being – or who hasn't been on TV a lot or who could afford to be back on TV a bit, I had it, and now I lost it, of course. But beyond Enofe and Blade, of course, Dante Chen, because you could always use more Dante Chen in your life. Cause
that's true.
Who couldn't? I think what we've seen lately of Lola Vice is promising, and she's been doing stuff on Level Up, I know, but I've only recently seen her on the main TV show, and she's still green, of course, but I think there's a lot of potential there, especially because of her MMA background and being able to utilize that. Also on the women's side, I want to see more of, I'm going to keep saying this, but specifically Valentina Feroce out of their tag team, because I just think she has a lot of potential to do a lot in this business. And she really looks like she puts in the effort and tries to make sure that segments she's in are successful. When it comes to the men's side, you know, I'm not the only person I can look, I think about as I want to see more on TV, and I haven't seen them, especially lately, is Obafemi. But, you know, maybe they weren't pleased with where he was at his development because, you know, he, Tang, and Danny Palmer had that kind of that sort of big hyped debuts, and they've kind of, outside of Tank, haven't really seen too much of them, and Palmer with the whole Davenport debut storyline. But yeah, Obafemi, as far as who's on TV a little too much, I mean, Joe Gacy, Schism.
Yeah.
That's probably the main one. Not so much Fowler and Reed, but, you know, Ava tonight, just her acting was not good at all. And as far as injured people, that I would need to know who's injured. I guess the big one, of course, is Sol Ruka, because she was on such a rise and a tear until, goddamn, I need to stop with these unintended puns, until she tore her ACL. So, yeah, that she'd be the big one. And the other only one I could think about that is injured is someone
Don't
that was getting too much TV, she was getting too much TV time already to begin with, was Nikita Lyon. So, you know, let's go with Sol Ruka instead.
Yep. So Sol Ruka was who I was going to pick for the injury, who I'm looking forward to come back for the women. The other one for the men, Quincy Elliott. He was getting a pretty big push. I think it was back like almost a year ago, and then got injured in a match. I want to say it was against Zion Quinn. I was reading the thing about him not that long ago.
Do you remember the real reason?
Wasn't it a car accident or something like that?
No. There were some, how do I put this? Let me look it up so I can get it completely accurate, but,
Was there a thing?
Yes, there was a thing.
Well, that sucks.
I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it was that. He's playing this character who obviously is flamboyant and supposed to be read as, you know, if not homosexual, at least not heterosexual. But I think one, at the time he identified as heterosexual, then he announced himself as non-binary, which doesn't necessarily have to do with sexual identity or sexual orientation. But I also think there were some things where he was either saying transphobic or homophobic stuff, and those were unearthed again. And so just a lot of things that were going on at once, including some not optically good things beyond the injuries at the time. So,
all right. So I guess I'm less excited about that then. There's that. What else was the other? So if who's getting too much TV time, definitely Schism. So yeah, there's that.
I mean, they're on like four segments tonight. Come on.
Yeah, and like I just don't care. I don't care about Schism. Like it I care about Grizzled Young Vets, and but not as Dyad really. I like watching them in the ring because they kind of still remind me of when they were the Grizzled Young Vets. But yeah, Schism, definitely Schism. Going with Schism. All right. Let's keep going here. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Heritage Cup. We had Noam Dar versus Tyler Bate in a match for the fake Heritage Cup, as they called it, Noam Dar's Heritage Cup. As you guys may remember, Noam Dar was given a replica or a second version of the Heritage Cup by his Metaphor counterparts to get him out of his depressive funk, which was hilarious and awesome, by the way, the depressed Noam Dar. He was given him the cup. Tyler Bate basically challenged him for the cup. He was able to, Noam Dar put the cup on the line, and we got a Heritage Cup rules match tonight for said cup, and Tyler Bate beat him. Which was hilarious. I kind of was hoping that was what was going to happen. I kind of saw it coming, but when it did happen, like, I audibly laughed. It was a great match. Heritage Cup rules, so yeah, we had the rounds and multiple falls and all of that. And so, which I think they played into phenomenally. I mean, Tyler Bate, Noam Dar, amazing talents, especially when they're inside the squared circle. So this match had everything that I could have wanted in it. It had Noam Dar, it had Tyler Bate, it had some comedic elements with Metaphor, it had the amazing, awesome technical elements of the Heritage Cup. So this was one of my favorite matches of the night. I think the main event was my favorite match of the night. This is my second favorite match of the night. Like I said, Tyler Bate wound up winning. Later on in the night, we saw Tyler Bate holding the cup out back. Metaphor and Noam Dar basically going, hey, we need that back. That's our property. And, you know, and Tyler Bate's kind of like, well, you know, I want it fair and square, but, you know, whatever. Nathan Frazier shows up with the real, basically said something along the lines of like, you know, if you just admit that this was a fake cup all along, you know, maybe I'll give you a shot at this cup at, was it Heat Wave? I think if he said Heat Wave. Yeah, I think it was Heat Wave. See, Heat Wave or No Mercy. One of the two PLEs coming up. They're trying to book two PLEs at once, PLE Light and actual PLE. So I don't remember which one, but one of the two. Noam Dar didn't really admit that it was a fake cup, but kind of sort of did. And they were both like, all right, that's about as good as we're going to get. So they wound up giving the fake one back to Noam Dar. So unfortunately, we're not going to get more depressed Dar, but I don't know, maybe we will, because this one isn't going to be good enough for him because it's not the real thing. I just want to see more depressed Dar. That was hilarious and great. Maybe not continually, but I like the character. It was a fun character. I like what Metaphor is doing too. I feel like they're really kind of coming into their own and figuring themselves out. Lash Legend is really the kind of the standout other than Noam Dar, but she's the one that's kind of really standing out to me between the rest of them. Come quite a long way from the days of lashing out with Lash Legend on NXT 2.0, which I don't even want to think about. Bruce, on this match.
So yeah, good match. Only issue was that after the first fall, they went to commercial, and I did not get the split screen break because of the online player. So
yeah.
It really does make me mad that I'm sure that there are more and more people like me who have access to watching online through USA, but not through traditional cable, and have this issue happen to them too. It's really, really annoying because every once in a while the split screen will happen, but for the most part, it does not. And so I missed pretty much all of round three up until about the last maybe 25 seconds when they came back from break, which was unfortunate. But I like with rounds matches too, it's you can't go full out from the start unless you're just going to squash somebody, right? So I like how they built from round one through to round five. The Bate and Dar have such good chemistry together that regardless of the match or the match type they're in, it's going to be a good match. That's exactly what happened here with what I was able to view it and whatnot. So Bate got the first fall. He hit Tyler Driver 97 just right there in the first round or the second round. Clean. And then we came back. Dar got the second fall when he locked in the knee bar and just Bate couldn't hold on throughout the rest of the round, and it was better for the tap than to try and weather the storm because of the nature of the match. Then you go into round five, excuse me, and at the end, Bate went for the Tyler Driver. Noam Dar tried to roll into a pin to a stack it, and then Bate used that momentum to then use his own stacked pin to get the victory. This was the other confusing thing for me about tonight in terms of the booking. So, you know, the whole schism thing. But here, that segment later on, what was the point of having Bate win here if he was just going to give it right back to Dar anyway and have the match with Frazier? Wouldn't it make more sense for Bate to be the one to face Frazier because he's the one that has the fake title? And then the other thing was Dar. He threw Mensa under the bus. He's like, and you know, it's like Frazier, Nathan, you beat Mensa for the title. It wasn't mean. And Mensa, what the hell? I'm sorry. You know, it was hilarious because he's trying to straddle the line between having a legitimate gripe and not blaming everything on his stablemate. But I just wasn't sure why you would do this and why Bate of all people would be so willing to give it up. And unless at the end, him and Frazier, when they looked at each other, that was a signal that he's going to get the first shot afterwards. I don't know. It just, I wasn't quite fond of how this all played out because I didn't think it made any sense with the match outcome, but that's just me.
Yeah, it was a little confusing, especially when like Frazier was like, I owe you one. And it was like, you do. I don't know. It was like, what did you owe him, really? I don't know. But whatever. I kind of am trying to, like, give it a bit of a pass. But because otherwise, like, it's been a fine angle. But yeah, that was a little bit weird. It's definitely a little bit weird. All right. We also saw Kalani Jordan take on Blair Davenport. I think it was as she was making her entrance, we cut to an Instagram story, I believe they said it was, where she calls out Blair Davenport. She says that she wants to take on the best that NXT has to offer, essentially, and Blair Davenport's it. And that, you know, she's big and bad and scary, and she wants to prove that she's able to hang with somebody that's big and bad and scary, like Blair Davenport. She gets in the ring, and to be honest, she kind of did hang with Blair Davenport. I was kind of surprised. I've been high on Kalani Jordan, but when like paired up against Blair Davenport with, you know, kind of her Blair's character and how she was just challenging, you know, for like titles and things. Actually, was she? No, she hasn't been in the title picture, but yeah, she's been in high profile spots, like, since kind of appearing back in NXT. I was kind of just expecting Blair Davenport to like wipe the floor with her and then Dana Brooke to be like, hey, I'll show you how it's done. And then, which is exactly what happened. And Dana Brooke was like, let me show you how it's done next week. Cause Kalani Jordan unfortunately did lose the match tonight. Dana Brooke's going to face her Blair Davenport next week, apparently to, like I said, show Kalani Jordan how it's done from a veteran. Curious to see if Brooke's actually going to be able to put away Davenport. My guess is no, but we'll see. But you know, overall here, I really like what I see out of Kalani Jordan. Like, she's brand new. I looked her up. I looked up online. I mean, she hasn't even been wrestling a year. It said, you know, she was signed in October of last year. So I'm like, for what she can do in the ring right now, I feel like it's like she's been wrestling for multiple years. you know, the gymnastics background, she's able to kind of incorporate that very well with just her move set and the way that she moves and flows in the ring. So between that and her look, and mic work probably needs a little bit of work. We haven't seen a whole heck of a lot to really make a determination, but what I've seen so far, probably a little bit of work. But I really like what I see, and I think there could certainly be, you know, a star in the making there if things, you know, continue to kind of go in her favor. The pairing with Dana Brooke is what it is. Like, you know, I keep saying Dana Brooke can only give someone so much of a push. But, you know, inevitably, I think we're going to wind up seeing Kalani Jordan versus Dana Brooke, kind of see the mentor versus the student. Maybe at No Mercy, maybe at Heat Wave. I think it all depends on how next week goes. But I think that's kind of where they're going with it. And it's fine. You know, I think it's a good way to do it and get her, you know, kind of ready and prepped for her first, you know, real feud outside of this kind of, I'm calling this a trial feud for Kalani Jordan because she's paired with Dana Brooke, you know, so somebody that's a bit more, you know, a bit more veteran and kind of understands the business. But, you know, so I'm curious to see how Kalani Jordan handles herself for her first big actual big girl feud after Dana Brooke. So on Blair Davenport and Kalani Jordan, Dana Brooke and all that good fun stuff, Bruce.
So the psychology of the match helped in terms of Davenport came into this overconfident, dismissive of Jordan, so that when Jordan came out quickly and started hitting things, it actually made sense because Davenport didn't look at Jordan as an actual threat. After all, she was the one who was called out by Jordan. Usually the people that are calling you out are the ones who are below you. So I think that helped. My main observation, I guess, from the match was that while Jordan hit a lot, she got a lot of offense in on Davenport. I think the psychology was why. It makes sense because she's so early in her career, but there didn't seem to be a cohesive flow into what she was really doing. It just seemed to be move here, move here, move here, move here, you know, do that. So that's the next thing she needs to work on. But again, in the segment later with Dana Brooke in the back, when Brooke's yelling at her about a killer instinct, Jordan said, "That was only my third match. I don't even know what my killer instinct looks like." So I think playing into that inexperience, a lot like they do with Thea Hale in a different way, though, is a smart idea because you obviously see the potential that Kalani Jordan has. And the base that she has is, again, something that is going to do well for her and something that Tiffany Stratton has used to become the top woman in the company. So I'm not sure where this heads or goes, and I don't know if I really care because, I mean, Jordan's fine. I'm just not invested. But I do like what we're seeing from Jordan in the ring. It's just now, you know, a lot of the people that are athletic when they get into wrestling, simply happen with Tiffany Stratton, simply happen to go back to like AJ Styles, they can get all their stuff in, but, you know, beyond the pacing issues, it's learning to use psychology and the ring and your surroundings to tell the story more so than making sure you get move A, B, and C. And so that's the next part of her progression I want to see is how quickly can you get from where you are right now in terms of getting your moves in to being able to tell a more psychological cohesive story within the ring. And, you know, 5 minutes or so isn't very much to do that. But, you know, they see the potential, and so I want to see what else she can do in terms of that development becoming more and more polished as she continues to go to, you know, match 4, 5, 10, 20, 50.
All right, let's go to our opener tonight. We had Axiom versus Mustafa Ali. So Mustafa Ali was kind of like the de facto guy we thought he was going to be the next in line for the North American Championship. We thought he was going to beat Wesley and take that title away. But of course, here we are. And Dominic Mysterio is now the North American champion. So Axiom and Mustafa Ali kind of can lay claim they're both kind of laying a little bit of claim here to the North American title. This match was kind of like a who's better? Who's better than who? So this was a great opening match. I thought it was a great way to kick off the show. It wasn't exactly the opener. Like the first thing we saw like Dominic and Rhea, and then Rey and Dragon Lee show up in a Rolls Royce, which I thought was pretty sweet. But this is the first match.
It was being driven by someone too, so they got the money.
Yeah, so they got to like just chill and relax in the back seat, which was sweet. I like the interior too. It was like black and red.
Yep.
It looked pretty badass. I'm a big black and red guy, so like I like that. But anyway, so
that guy, everybody.
I wasn't really well, kind. I don't know, a little bit, sort of. I like black and red. It's a good color combination. In the middle of the match, Scripps winds up showing up with Bronco and Lima on the did I say I said Bronco and Lima, didn't I?
It's Bronco, Nima, and Lucian Price.
Yes, thank you. I wrote Bronco and Lima in the hits and misses, and like as I verbally said it, I'm like that's wrong. But anyway, they showed up on the ramp, kind of distracting Axiom. And it was kind of sort of that distraction that I feel like shifted the momentum in favor of Mustafa Ali, who was able to pick up the win here. I feel like that was probably the right way to go. Mustafa Ali, you know, sort of main roster guy coming back down to NXT, a little bit more of name value than Axiom. Axiom, you know, I think he's also in the middle of this feud right now with Scripps, and so it's like he's got something to do, whereas Mustafa Ali kind of like it almost felt like the thing he had to do was win the North American title, and then Dominic came in and was like, oh yeah, nope, that's mine. Sorry, you got to figure something else out for right now. So it almost feels like Mustafa Ali is almost, I don't want to say floundering, but he's in like this like holding pattern, I guess I should say. You know, kind of still laying claim to North American title, but not directly going for it. You know, I mean, can't really do heel versus heel. Mustafa Ali, arguably a heel right now, maybe more of a tweener, but arguably more of a heel. So I think maybe they're kind of putting him in a holding pattern until potentially a face is the North American champion, and then they put him against Mustafa Ali. My thoughts. What are your thoughts, Bruce?
So, let's see here. The biggest part you left out was how the match ended, where they were on the apron. Axiom was on the second rope. Ali was on the apron. And as he was fighting off Axiom, he grabbed out his face and grabbed the underside of the mask, and it went up halfway on Axiom's face, and he put it back down, and they both were kind of shocked. And then Ali just pushed him down from the second rope to the mat, and then hit the 450 back in the ring for the victory. So I wrote that this character of Ali, since he's been NXT, has done a lot of things in terms of being that sneaky heel, the little underhanded face, many ways in this way of acting shocked that he did something like that is a good way to do that. The other thing about this match is when it started, Ali was basically showing that Axiom isn't on his level, kind of just like toying with him a little bit. And then I kind of disagree with you saying that Scripps showing up with Nima and Price led to the downfall, because they left and I still wrote a whole extra paragraph, a paragraph and a half for the rest of the match. So they left with several minutes left before the match ended. It was kind of weird because Scripps showed up first and then Nima and Price joined him. And then they left together, but then there was no real, and I guess it's nice to not have interference in the match, but there was no, again, another aspect where there was no real resolution to what happened tonight. There was no follow-up tonight either. So as the opening match of the show, though, it was a good match. These two meshed well together. I was hoping there'd be a commercial break just because these two go at a pace that makes it a little difficult to keep up with everything. There was one clunky spot in the match where Axiom kind of, he held onto the hand and kind of went for a springboard moonsault DDT that didn't quite land very well. But beyond that, these two had the chemistry. They performed well in the match. Ali was the rightful person to get the victory. After the match, he looked straight into the camera and called out the winner of the North American Championship match. So if they don't go with the tag team match at Heatwave, I assume that Ali is going to face Dominic in 2 weeks for the title, and that'd be the stopgap between Dragon Lee getting the title from Dom at No Mercy. So all in all, a good opener, right winner, pretty much. I guess it's not clean because of the whole mask aspect, but he hit his finisher and pinned him 1-2-3. So, yeah, I think I just want to see the further development of this sort of heel, but not heel, but I am a heel, Mustafa Ali.
All right, going to throw a couple more segments or three more segments at you rapid fire, and then we're out of here for the night, guys. So we had Rey Mysterio backstage kind of talking with Roxanne Perez, giving the obligatory rub to Roxanne Perez, as they've been ought to do over the past handful of months with her, which is fine. So it was cool to kind of see the two of them interact backstage and him kind of give her a bit of a pep talk. But speaking of pep talk, he then sees Thea Hale backstage and basically says, hey, I'm loving what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Believe in yourself. And basically gave her like this amazing pep talk. After Rey walks away, Thea Hale is kind of standing there like, oh my God, like this is amazing, and kind of like pumping herself up. And Andre Chase and Duke Hudson walk up to her. She was very clearly upset that the two of them walked over, especially Andre Chase, and said something along the lines of how Rey would never have thrown in the towel if he was in her corner. And Andre Chase was kind of like, yo, well, that sucks, as she stormed away. I really liked this segment, to be honest, especially the part with Thea Hale. I thought there was some great character development there for her. She, like, was super, super, super excited to see Rey Mysterio, and then, kind of got almost calm, and, like, as he was talking and kind of praising her work and everything, like, she was intently listening to what he was saying, and then it was almost like when she was right before Hudson and Chase showed up, she was like almost trying to get her mojo back and get that energy back. Like she wasn't quite the same Thea Hale as she was at the beginning of the segment. We kind of also saw that when, you know, she told Andre Chase off. So I don't know. I like this. I thought it was some good character development work for her there. Speaking of character development work, we also saw a couple vignettes that I thought were very well produced here tonight. One for Eddie Thorpe, kind of showcasing some of his, his cultural background, out in nature and all of that. Again, extremely well done. We also had a vignette for Los Lotharios, where we saw Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo. I could not think of his name for a second. It basically like sending text messages back and forth to each other, kind of upset at one another and looking to apologize after, their blow up after being a tag team for so long, and basically bringing up their family history and how their grandfather's shamed, looks down on them in shame and all of that. I thought this was also very well done. I think maybe a little bit over the top, kind of like Lifetime movie, sort of. We even saw Angel Garza like shed a tear. I think it was also, even if it was a little over the top, I think it did a good job at kind of like framing Los Lotharios as, as family, if anybody did forget that. But framing them as family and, a potential reuniting for them. I'm not quite sure what the whole thing is though, why they would have broken them. I'm not sure. I wouldn't say broken them up, but why they're having some chaos and turmoil between them, to begin with, if they're just, immediately going to make good here. But
what happened was a few weeks ago, after they lost a tag team match, Humberto blew up at Angel in the parking lot and said he's sick of this and he's done, and then he walked off. He's like, women, cars, like, we're not winning. And then he walked off. That's what led to this.
No, I mean, I know that. But, like, I don't know. I just, you know, yeah, okay. I guess it was, like, the apology. So that works. That works. But, yeah. So, overall, like I said, I thought it was a pretty well done segment overall. So, yeah, on those three last segments on the Ray, Roxanne Perez, and Thea segment, Eddie Thorpe and Los Lotharios.
So the first one, Ray also told her that he understands what it's like to be an underdog, and it's also advice that applies to Roxanne Perez as well, because both of them have diminutive sizes, which is going to make them seem like underdogs in pretty much every single match they're in. And, you know, Hale was also holding on to the towel that Chase threw in still, and it's the towel that Baron Corbin threw back at her last week. And I thought what was hilarious to me about this segment was
Welp, I'm not entirely sure what happened, but it looks like both Bruce and I dropped off the switchboard in the middle of Bruce talking. I just joined back, and he's not here. So there's that. Let me see if I can get us back in here for a minute. Bear with me, guys. I think I'm almost there. I think I am almost there. Hold on. Riveting podcasting, people.
Okay.
Sorry, it just dropped on me.
I was still connected to the show via my cell phone, so I was able to, like, at least jump in. I don't know what just happened. Skype on my computer, like, crashed, and I think crashed the call. So that just dropped us completely off as you were mid-sentence. So, Bruce, continue.
Talking about Thea Hill and Rey Mysterio on them, but the funniest part to me was Duke Hudson still walking around holding that trophy and looking so smug. To the Eddie Thorpe segment, I appreciate that they're allowing him to do this and bring out what makes him who he is. I like how he said he hates how Dijak has been attacking him, but he didn't blame anyone else but himself for not being able to defeat Dijak. My only concern is I hope that, unlike in their past, they don't go the stereotypical route that they do with characters like this. So Tonka being the big one, right? But I like how they've been doing a lot of development in terms of character for Eddie Thorpe throughout the past couple of weeks, the past month or so, where it's not just him in these matches. It's him on the mic. It's him in a vignette. It's him training with Gable Stevenson, showing a little more of who he is and him, Eddie Thorpe. And then the Los Lotharios segment, I really like this because if there was ever an act that needed a hard shift in terms of their character, their disposition, their presentation, it's these two. They're very talented. When Garza was on NXT and he was defending the Cruiserweight Championship or he was vying for it, his matches were really good. He also had a very unique finisher in the Wing Clipper, which we didn't really see anything like that before. Carrillo, the same way. Very talented. The Aztec Press, something that you don't see in terms of a finisher that he can do. They're very talented. Having them go that route, I think, was just to be safe. And now, channeling their family history. And it's not just their grandfather. I mean, it's their whole family. They brought that up, too. Like, he brought in the entire family into the business. So there are connections for them to make that they can channel in a different way than Eddie Thorpe to then make them more serious. And we've been discussing for weeks now, the men's tag team division is so weak right now in NXT, especially with the Creed, you know, gone, quote-unquote. But even then, there aren't many teams around. And a lot of the teams that are around the No Phase and Blade, the Grayson's and Jensen's, the Hanks and Tanks, they're not going to be tag team champions anytime soon. They're not going to fight for that title anytime soon. Gallus was just vying for that. D'Angelo and Sax are the champion. Dyad, they're not going to do it as Dyad. It's to get them reestablished and get them to be one of the top tag teams is going to do wonders for both them and NXT itself, just because of how sparse that tag team division is. So I really like how they did it here. They got so much across without needing them to say a single word verbally. And if you look at their faces, they seemed to be struggling. And that tear from Garza mixed with the sad orchestra music was just, it was bordering on too cheesy, but I think it hit just the right notes. And I'm excited to see what comes of them. I anticipate that we won't see them next week, and they're going to do something at Heat Wave to make a statement to then set them up to face D'Angelo and Sax at No Mercy.
And with all of that, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show tonight, guys. I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up for tonight's episode of NXT, so please check that out. Let me know what you think. Leave me a comment or something. That'd be kind of cool. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazel. You can find me at B_Lee253 and my report up on both the free and the VIP side.
All right, guys. We will talk with you next week. Take care.